Hey, hey, this is Richie coming at you from the School of Marketing HQ. Before you dive into the show, I just want to tell you about a brand new short 12-week program we've launched called the Giants Marketing Masterclass. The program gives you access to insights and expert comments from over 25 CEOs and CMOs from major companies like Unilever, L'Oreal, M&S, Pret, and WPP, just to name a few. We focus on six key areas of marketing: customer, brand, commercial, creative, channel, and data and analytics. So if you were looking to upskill yourself or your team for just 2.5 hours each week and get access to a network with our industry's giants through our live sessions, do check out the School of Marketing website for more deets. Alrighty, for now, enjoy the show.
Well, hello everybody again, and welcome to the Places We'll Go show. Again, extremely privileged to have a fantastic guest, Simon Michaelides from UK TV. Well, I'll just come back to that in a moment, actually. But I've known Simon for a few years, and I'll come back to that as well. But I can tell you, Simon is going to be a fantastic guest. So let's just do a bit of a recap of Simon. So I've actually been at UK TV for 10 years in various marketing, innovation, commercial, transformation roles, most recently as Chief Marketing and Innovation Officer. But he has got high pedigree in marketing, I can tell you. So started with 6 years at P&G, which is probably the blue ribbon of marketing graduate careers, both in the UK and Switzerland. Worked on some household brands, Flash, Febreze, Fairy Liquid. And I think did the archetypal assistant brand manager, senior brand manager. So that's a cracking start. Then 6 years at Pepsi. Again, a string of great brands, Tropicana, Naked, Walkers, marketing manager through to senior marketing manager through to marketing director. So all sounds quite linear. Now does many cool things, including non-exec at ISBAR and various NED roles. But actually, we're very fortunate to be talking to Simon at a pivot moment. So Simon, you'll tell us as much as you can, but yeah. I happen to know that you're about to be moving very soon. So we'll hear more about that. But just before we get started, Simon is yet another guest we've had on of the Marketing Academy Fellowship. And Simon and I were on the same course in 2014. I would say it was a great year. We had Sarah Warby, Craig Ingalls, who were also that year, have been on the show in previous episodes. And there's just one moment which I did remind Simon of a few months ago, which was at the very beginning of this course. You know, there's the great and the good there. It's in one way intimidating. And he opened up with a huge amount of vulnerability early on in the process, when we were all doing a bit of sharing of ourselves. And that really set the tone for the whole year and everything that has followed for that cohort. So Simon is a very insightful, focused, but calm and incredibly easy person to talk to. And so I'm going to be fascinated to get another layer of Simon's journey through life and career. So Simon, you are most welcome on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to quit whilst I'm ahead. I'm going to take that accolade, you know, and bottle that. That was great. Thank you, Mark.
How awesome. Well, Simon, honestly, it's been ages since we've been planning this session. So I'm really glad it's finally here on a wonderful sunny afternoon here in London anyways. But Simon, let me kick us off and ask you how you've been doing. I mean, how's the last couple of months been for you?
I've been good. You know, it's been an unusual last couple of months because, as Mark said, you know, I'm about to move on. So it's been weird in the sense that I've remained highly engaged at UK TV, and it's been a phenomenal time for the business in terms of results and in terms of, you know, the marketing agenda. But strange at the same time, bringing, you know, a whole chapter of my life, a whole decade to a close and kind of preparing to move on in just a couple of weeks time. So, but good. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. And so a pivot moment, 10 years setting off for new shores. Tell us a bit more about what and why and how and when.
It's all in the public domain, so I can be, you know, fully transparent, literally setting off for new shores in the sense that I'm going into the travel industry. So I've built my career really on these slightly strange handbrake turns, you know, often hidden inside of organizations as well. I've made these kind of great leaps. It's part of what drives me, which I'm sure we'll come to. But, you know, was really hungry for a new challenge. The travel industry was that. I knew that TV was going to be hard to beat, you know, having gone from kind of crisps and orange juice into television. It's a lot more fun getting out of bed in the morning to talk about television. So I knew it was going to be hard to beat. But I think travel ranks up there with one of those, you know, industries that is really emotive, both for the people who work in it and also for, you know, for the customers. So looking forward to that, taking on a larger role as chief customer officer at an organization called Riviera Travel. So it's adding strings to my bow in that respect, still retaining all of Marcom's, but looking after direct sales and customer service and research and insight. So that's great. And I guess the final string to the bow, the thing that attracted me was it's a private equity backed business, which was not attractive from the financial side. I know lots of people chase private equity for, but it was just again, it was a case, a case of going, right, I've not experienced private equity. And I'm a big believer in enriching your own gene pool, so I thought, okay, that's another thing that I just don't know about. It's a big black box. And if I can go into that and learn that world, that will be exciting and hopefully set me up, for something else on the other side of it. So that's what I'm off to do in just a couple of weeks' time, August the 1st. That will be my new life.
How amazing. I mean, look, it's fascinating. I mean, use the term handbrake turns. I found that really cool. And I'd love you to elaborate a little bit on what that actually means. But more so than that, some would call you pretty brave to be going into the travel industry at this moment in time as well. There definitely must be a sense of adventure within you as well to make these constant handbrake turns in your career.
Yeah. For a long time, I didn't really pay much attention to which direction my career was going in. I kind of, if you'd asked me at the time, I would have said I was a bit like a sailboat, on a pond, just going wherever the wind blew me. But clearly other people could see things in me that it took me a while to kind of recognize. And I think I had my eureka moment where a coach who I work with very closely, she once said to me, she said, your problem. And I said, no, go on, what's that? And she said, well, you think of yourself as a marketeer who happens to be a good change agent. And she said, actually, you're a change agent who happens to be a good marketeer. And that was the eureka moment. And when I then stood back and looked at my career, that is what defines my career. I point myself at change. Martin Glenn, who used to be the president of PepsiCo, CEO of the FA, he was president of PepsiCo UK when I was there. He once said to me, there are two types of people, those that run towards gunfire and those that run away from it. And you're one of the people who runs towards it. And I think that's true. I am not the steady as she goes guy. It doesn't get me out of bed in the morning. And in fact, I know that it brings the worst out in me and I will just get bored and lazy and won't do my best work. So I go in search of challenges, putting myself out of my comfort zone, learning new things, adding strings to my bow. In some respects, I feel like my life is about trying to discover my breaking points and my limitations. Haven't found it yet in my career, thankfully, and it's going to be painful if and when I do. But yeah, it's all about pointing myself at the new, the different, often the thing that other people are running away from. And so in this case, it's travel, which lots of people are going, are you mad, and running away from. But I look at it and go, look, that's exciting, right? If you've got travel businesses that are still standing after the last two or three years, then fingers crossed, you're arguably through the worst of it. And now it's about the exciting recovery. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Love it.
So Simon, you've got transformation in your blood and bones, yeah. I think. In the conversations we've had, the most interesting ones have been about quite distant to marketing, in fact. So I suppose you've found a haven for that in marketing. But the obvious question is what drives that restlessness and willingness to crash yourself against the rocks for something that might be?
I think I think I'm a relatively restless personality anyway, for better or for worse. My wife will testify that I often drive her mad. I'm not famous for kind of sitting quietly beside a pool, during holidays. I'd be much, much more comfortable kind of being out and about doing stuff usually. And I think that kind of spills over into my career. I think it's I've just always been quite curious. And I'm one of these personalities who someone once described it to me as kind of snorkeling rather than scuba diving. I like to skim across the surface of lots of things. I'm all constantly, into this, into that, and I'm not massive. You find people who are fans of one thing and they can recite every little bit of knowledge, about it. I'm not that person, even though I have my passions. My passions probably only run, you know, so deep. And I think my career looks like that as well. I love marketing. I absolutely love marketing. I love the kind of behavioral science, you know, side of marketing. I love knowing that, you know, kind of, I feel it's where, I would say this, but I feel it's where the power of the business is, you know, in terms of influencing people to do something differently. That's fundamentally how all of our businesses make money, right? You know, I love that, but I have never been able to think about my job in that siloed way. I've always thought holistically about the whole business machine and how everything interconnects. And I've always relished the opportunity to kind of touch different parts of the business and influence different parts. And I think my career is almost like a, you know, it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle or some kind of Lego kit where I'm collecting different bits that are slowly piecing together, you know, to make me a whole, you know, whatever that end whole, you know, kind of looks like.
Simon, you know, it's interesting because it feels, to the outsider, it kind of feels like there's sort of two phases in your career at the moment, or the two eras in some senses. In one hand, you've been able to carve out a very traditionalist marketing route, right? P&G, PepsiCo, yeah. Very traditionalist. And then on the other, you made these kind of real twist turns and pivots as you're kind of doing now. So how do you reconcile that sort of the before and now sort of after, in the context of how you see the world and how you see your career shaping up?
Do you know, I think what it was, Richie, is I got braver, I think, you know, and less risk averse. But I think what, from the outside in, what looks like a traditional career was perhaps less traditional in reality. You know, in my P&G and PepsiCo days, the jobs that everyone was chasing were the big brands. You know, everyone wanted to be at P&G, everyone wanted to be the brand manager or the marketing director on Ariel. You know, everyone wanted to go for the biggest categories with the biggest budgets, you know, the sexiest brands in the business. My career, you know, I was pointing myself at things like, you know, at the time, what Procter & Gamble called customer co-marketing that they were pioneering, which we now all recognize as shopper marketing or, you know, customer marketing. I did that for 2.5 years. You know, I appointed myself at innovation roles. You know, when I found myself in kind of dead man's shoes, you know, waiting for incumbents to move out of my next assignment, I kind of crafted roles for myself and sold them, you know, to senior management and went off. You know, I was in Geneva for 4 months troubleshooting upstream MPD initiatives because, you know, I could see that they needed some help and I just kind of put myself forward. You know, it's on the outside, it looks like quite a linear path. And I guess it was in terms of titles, you know, assistant brand manager, senior brand manager, so on and so forth. But actually what I was doing to get there was often quite unconventional. And I feel like for me, it was about learning. You know, it was about going into that unknown space, that uncharted territory, and finding out more, you know, about the way the machine worked, you know, more about what I was capable of, more about how, you know, other things clicked together to influence the business. And every time I've stepped out of one of those roles, much richer for it. I think the pivot was when, the real pivot was when I left PepsiCo. And I think I remember distinctly standing at a crossroads going, the easiest thing in the world now would be to go and get another FMCG job. But I didn't want to be branded the FMCG kid. You know, I thought if I do that, at that point, I was getting close to 15 years in FMCG. You know, I was thinking if I do another FMCG job, that is it. I will be, no one will ever touch me for anything else. So I thought, right, if there's an itch to scratch, now is the time. And I think that leap was what ultimately, you know, and it worked, was then what made me go, oh, OK, there is life outside of huge multinationals. There is life outside of, you know, outside of FMCG. And actually, it's really exciting and in many ways more rewarding. And I think that was what gave me the bravery then to take on an even more unconventional path. And obviously, television was the next move after that. You know,
amazing.
So, you're happy to tread where others fear to.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. So some people don't have that chutzpah.
Yeah.
So where does it come from? We're all a product of our past. So what can you put your finger on why you think that is true in you?
Yeah, do you know, I don't think one is right or wrong at all. You know, I think it all comes down to, as you say, to who we are. You know, I think there are things probably lurking in, you know, all of us in our upbringings, in our childhoods. You know, I think a lot of it for me, some of what drives me is chasing security. You know, now you and I have talked about this before. You know, I come from a relatively humble background. You know, my dad was a self-employed builder. My mom was a medical secretary. My granddad was a postman, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I, back in the kind of 90s, you know, I watched my dad lose his business. I watched it go bust. And, you know, and for whatever reason, he chose it would be to leave me at home. I think I was about 14, 15 at the time, the day the bailiffs came around, you know, to kind of take everything away. And that had a profound impact on me. And I think that really drove me forward to want to succeed in business, not because I was chasing a mansion house anywhere, but because I made one simple promise to myself. And it was, that was never, ever going to happen to me, you know, and my family. And I think what that's driven in me is also a sense of, you know, I think really where this kind of constantly chasing new things comes from is what I believe is a healthy degree of kind of modesty and humility in myself, in the sense that I never believe that I'm good enough. You know, I think, you know, you mentioned some of the others that were in our cohort on the, you know, Marketing Academy Fellowship. And I all remember we all walked through the door on day one and we all did exactly the same thing. We all went, no idea how I got on this, you know. And I was thinking, but this is ridiculous. You know, you're Mark Evans, you know, and you're Craig Ingalls and you're Sarah Warby, you know, and then there's little old me. But it didn't matter who we were, what our job titles were, how successful we've been in our careers. Every single one of us went, I have no idea how I got here. And I think that's actually a really interesting ingredient for a lot of the people that find themselves on, you know, on the Marketing Academy Fellowship. And I think it's a large part of why we are all, you know, thankfully successful, because I think it's healthy. I think there's a fine balance between, you know, kind of a corrosive degree of imposter syndrome all the way through to the spectrum, you know, of kind of ego that then is equally corrosive. I think there's a happy middle ground of having some humility, some modesty that drives you in the sense that you always believe that you can do better. You always believe that there's more to learn. You always believe that adding those strings to your bow can only make you a better person in terms of what you can then give back to others. And I think that is what drives me. You know, I never want to go to my grave with what if, you know, kind of on my headstone, you know, what if I tried that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I want to find out, you know.
Wow. I mean, incredible, really. And it's funny you say that, because I look at all of you guys going, well, you guys are like the kingpins. And it's just like you say, you know, it's never ending in the context of looking at others and feeling like that. And it's, you know, it's humbling actually when someone like yourself says that. And, you know, thank you for sharing that story about your dad. I mean, that must be
my pleasure.
But that must be really, really tough. And I mean, I certainly haven't had that experience, but certainly, you know, similar in the context of difficult times as a youngster. I mean, how do you think that's, I mean, you talked about security as being a big lever for you now. I mean, are there any other things that you think have had, you know, sort of, you know, having a long-term impact or things that period of time for you has kind of, you know, held you back or pushed you forward or?
Yeah, you know, I think also, you know, there are times that I look back and, you know, I don't deal well with failure, as my wife likes to tell me, because thankfully, because it doesn't happen very often, which I think is a good thing. She would probably say it's a bad thing. But, you know, I think the times where I have failed, often I can trace it back to having got lazy or having got too complacent, you know, and perhaps not having given it my, you know, given it my all. And that's actually one of the things that makes me cross with myself. You know how sometimes you can have this almost out of body experience where you know you're not quite giving it your all, you know you're not on your aim game, but even though you know it, you can't quite stop yourself, you know. And so I think that as well, I think kind of influences me to, you know, to keep pointing myself at new things and to keep trying, you know, and to keep looking to learn and, you know, and develop. And I think also, I think I've learned also to talk about those failures more, because I think talking about them helps you to understand them and helps you to learn from them, and others, you know, can bring some really valuable perspectives. You know, I think certainly in my younger years and certainly in my early career, I was scared of talking about failure because I somehow thought I would get penalized for it, or that I would be judged, you know, in a dangerous way, you know, for doing that. So I kind of kept it all bottled up. Whereas now I think, you know, I'm a big believer in owning your failures. You know, I absolutely believe that you learn way more from your failures than you ever learn from your successes. And if I was ever presented with a choice of, you can go back over your life and either keep all the failures or keep all the successes, I would, it sounds crazy, but I would keep the failures, because they are the things that have shaped me. You know, it's not the successes that have shaped me.
Yeah, we hear this time and time again, and the cliche, you can't fail to learn. I know there's also deep resilience in you, Simon, and, you know, the pandemic has challenged everybody, but and not least because I think you're a very present person. Yeah. So here we are, the lockdowns, and you unfortunately broke your leg quite badly. So not only you, so you've got sort of double frustration and restriction. So tell us a bit about that and how you cope with that and what you learned from that.
Yeah, do you know, I did find lockdown really hard. You're right. You know, I get my energy from being around people, and I'd much rather be physically present, you know, with people. So I was struggling. And I think, you know, one of the other things I struggled with, which, you know, I don't think gets talked about enough, and this is kind of now sympathy with my peer group, is, you know, they say it's lonely at the top. And I think it is in that respect, because you're looking after everybody else. You know, you're looking after your direct reports. They're looking after their teams. You're trying to provide an umbrella of support for everyone. There are not very many people that are looking after you, you know, and really not very many at all, you know. And so I found that hard, because I didn't really have anywhere to go, you know, to decompress. And I couldn't really do it. My wife's a teacher, so she was the last person in the world that I could kind of, you know, decompress to, because she was having it way, you know, way harder than I was. I did struggle. And then, as you say, I kind of promptly started to fall apart, you know, kind of managed to break my ankle very badly in two places by trying to exercise in my own garage. You know, that was rather embarrassing. Ended up wearing glasses, which was a new kind of thing for me as well. And then ended up having surgery on my jaw. So lockdown was not a fun, you know, experience for me. I did struggle with it. But again, I think I learned from it. You know, I learned a lot more about, as you say, how resilient I am. And I think I was surprised at just how resilient I really am able to be. But at the same time, I know where my boundaries were. And I think it made me realize I have to take better care of myself. You know, I think leaders often put themselves last in the equation. But actually, there's an argument for saying you've got to at least put yourself on an equal footing with everyone else when it comes to kind of well-being and looking after yourself. Because otherwise, how can you look after other people if you yourself are not in a fit state? You know, people are looking for you to make decisions. People are looking for you to kind of be an emotional rock for them. How can you do that if you are not in a fit state yourself? So I certainly learned, you know, a lot in that respect. But I think also it helped me to really get comfortable with what some of my limitations are. You know, it helped me to get comfortable with everyone's got strengths and weaknesses, right? And I think, you know, I grew up in a corporate culture where the focus was on trying to iron out everybody's weaknesses, you know, and get them up to a kind of threshold level. And actually, there are some things where I now go, do you know what? I'm just not very good at that. And I'm never going to be very good at that. So that's okay. I just have to be open and honest about it, and then surround myself with other people who can compensate for that, you know.
Oh, Simon, absolutely. You know, there's plenty of people who'll be listening in right now who, you know, would be looking to forge a career like yourself, you know, a multitude of sectors, industries, and of course, at the top of the marketing game, right? And I just wondered if there's any advice or guidance you would share about maybe some of the things that, or tips that, you know, you've been able to, that's held you in good stead over the years to help as you sort of climb that ladder.
One really great bit of advice that I was given that I would absolutely, adhere to. It was once, an old general manager at PepsiCo once said to me, the most important thing you can do is run your own race. And what she meant by that is forget what's happening to other people or forget what other people are doing. Forget the rainbows that they're chasing. Know what gets you out of bed in the morning. It's what I call, it's what I call my transferable motivators. Know what it is that gets you out of bed in the morning, the type of work you like doing, the skills that you like employing, that you could identify in any industry, in any job, in any function. And if you know what those things are, they act like a kind of true North Star for you. And then run your own race, forget everyone else, because we all get caught up, the little ego in the back of our head. We all get caught up with, well, why was so-and-so promoted, ahead of me? Or how come they're earning more than me? Or why has that person, been able to get that amazing job? Because I used to work with them and I know that, half the things they're claiming to do, they didn't actually do, all that stuff. We all have those voices. You go, forget it, because it is just noise, right? I've seen so many friends, so many colleagues have fallen into that bucket of be careful what you wish for. They've gone chasing the superficial labels and they've got them. And then they've been deeply, deeply unhappy, for one reason or another. I think if you know what those transferable motivators are, very quickly stuff falls away. I've always found it easier to know what I don't want rather than what I do want. And I think that has also been a factor in my career because, if you look at it through that lens, suddenly a much wider array of things, become viable, because you go, okay, have they all passed through the filters and are they all still standing? You go, yes, they are. And then you go, well, in that case, why wouldn't I become the chief commercial officer for UK TV? Or why wouldn't I become the chief transformation officer? Whereas if I'd looked through, marketing career lens or whatever, then those things probably would never have happened.
You've reminded me of a quote that I share with my children quite often. Baz Luhrmann's sunscreen. Sometimes you're behind, sometimes you're ahead. The race is long, but in the end, it's only with yourself. Which is actually a good segue to my question. If I talk about family, wife's a teacher, my wife's a nurse, and I just want to talk a little bit about how you think she might balance you out. You sort of alluded to it a little bit, but yeah. If I take Lorna for example, she'll say very quickly, if I'm disappearing up somewhere in this sort of corporate la-la land, is there a balancing out thing there?
There is absolutely a balancing out, yeah. So we are literally exact opposites. So she used to work at Procter & Gamble. That's not where we met, but she used to work at Procter & Gamble. And so we've both been kind of, profiled, left, right and center. And Myers-Briggs, we are exact polar opposites, which I always chuckle about then when you look at some of the kind of, fun versions of Myers-Briggs that she's C-3PO and I'm R2-D2. If you do it on the Star Wars one. And yeah, and actually I owe her an awful lot because she is. She is like a little voice of reason. She is my conscience a lot of the time. She knows me in many ways better than I know myself. And while sometimes it can be a little bit painful, to hear some of the things, it's a really, it's really useful to have that kind of counter foil, And so, yeah, I don't think I would be able to do, what I've done without her, as a kind of additional voice and sounding board.
Nice moment. Nice.
My dog is coming in and out of the room like a yo-yo. He's currently very unhelpfully standing just inside the door. So
he probably wants a mention. He'll be happy now he's had a mention.
Yeah, that's right. He's got his mention. He can leave us alone now. He's like, none of this behaving myself. You're not going to talk about me.
Oh, brilliant. Well, talking about the themes of family, I'd love to know what are the pieces of advice that you give your kids?
Sometimes I reflect and I go, should I have had more words of wisdom? Should I have had some kind of like big mantra or whatever? But I've always, I've always kept it relatively simple, and really condensed my whole kind of parenting philosophy down to two things to them. I've always said to them, look, you've only got one life, and the only two things that are important are being, you know, happy, healthy, and safe. You know, so that's you know, we always say to them, look, any conversation we're having with you, anything we're saying to you, even though it might be a bit unwelcome at times, it's ultimately about, you know, happy, healthy, or safe. And the only other thing I really drive home with them is, look, treat others the way that you would want to be treated. You know, I think at the end of the day, that's, you know, we're all on this planet together. You know, we're all different, but we're all, you know, special people in our, you know, in our own way. And, you know, you don't have to agree with everyone about everything. I think actually that would be a horrible place to live if we, you know, if we all agreed, you know, on absolutely everything. But treat other people, you know, the way that you would want to be treated, I think is the mantra. And then they're their own people, right? You know, so I don't want to unduly influence them. You know, as new parents were, when, you know, but hopefully most parents will agree with me on this. You know, we all have this debate when you're a new parent: is it nature? Is it nurture? You know, and I think actually, I feel very strongly that it's about 80-90%, you know, kind of nature. Your kids are born with this program installed, and you can try as much as you like to influence around the edges, but that's about as far as you can get. You know, fundamentally, they're their own people. And so all you can do is help guide them to be the best version of themselves, you know, I think.
Yeah, indeed. We have a marginal role. People come out of the factory in a certain manner. But we all keep learning. And so what have you still yet to learn, Simon?
Do you know, I think, Mark, one of those things is you don't know what you don't know, right? So that I think that's another part of the adventure for me. You know, I've always had a loose direction that I want to travel in. You know I would love to be a CEO one day. But I know that that's, you know, not of a huge multinational publicly listed company. You know, I think having had the beauty of having had this squiggly career path is, again, I've been able to learn, you know, where some of those parameters are for me, where the things I find motivating, the things I don't. I really love kind of mid-cap size, you know, businesses. And there is a kind of freedom that comes with privately owned businesses. So I would love to be a CEO one day. And in that respect, I know that I've definitely got, you know, more learning to do. So, you know, the more experience I can get of the different operational parts of a business, the more board time I can get under my belt, you know, with things that I know don't come naturally to me. You know, I know lots of people say that I'm very financially literate. I've always felt like that's something I have to work at. You know, I know somebody can just look at numbers and read them like they're, you know, words on a page, like they're a book. I understand them, but I don't feel like I'm reading them like the latest novel. So, you know, the more I can immerse myself in things like that. And actually, I think people, you know, people skills are still a big thing for me. I interact. My dog is determined to scupper this. Apologies. There you go. Right. You know, one thing I think I'm not particularly skilled at, in the sense that there are people who are way better than I am, is I'm not very good at interaction at scale. You know, I much prefer. So I think, for example, my direct reports would have probably a slightly different view to me, you know, than my wider team. Because I'm much better in small group formats. I'm much better, you know, one-on-one than I am kind of, you know, projecting, you know, to large groups of people. Very comfortable standing up in front of large groups of people. But actually, I'm actually quite a shy person inside, which might sound a bit weird. You know, if you threw me in a party, you know, for example, I would always gravitate towards the people I know. And unless somebody forced me not to, you know, I would probably spend the whole night stood in a corner chatting to the three people I know, even if there's another 100 people there. I'm not the person who will just walk up to the other 100 and, you know, and strike a conversation. I actually feel, you know, a bit awkward, you know, and a little bit uncomfortable. And I kind of am like that. You know, I've learned to put on a bit of a veneer. You know, I can do the jazz hands. I can stand up in front of people. I don't get particularly stressed out by that, but it's not my natural skill set. So again, I think, you know, more people stuff, I think, you know, is a great thing to keep learning. And obviously, to a degree, the more you climb the ladder, you know, the bigger the teams you look after, the more of that kind of thing you have to do. So I could definitely sharpen the saw there.
It's great. It's actually great to hear that someone can achieve all that you have and yet, you know, feel like, and I think perhaps a bit more perception that you know, you're less comfortable in those sort of environments and doing those sort of things. It's quite incredible, actually, because there's certainly, you know, amongst sort of my, you know, people that I know, we always talk about the value of networking, for example,
yeah,
and the need to constantly be doing this. And yet it doesn't feel like that's played a massive role, or maybe it has. What do you think?
Do you know, actually, I am now a massive advocate of networking. I always used to shun it, and I always used to poo-poo it. I think partly because it was something that didn't come naturally and I felt a little uncomfortable with it. But I think partly because I had a misunderstanding of it. You know, I thought it was a lot of kind of, you know, people blowing smoke up each other's, you know, proverbials, as it were. But actually, what I realized is you never know where the next interesting conversation is going to come from. You never know where the next opportunity is going to come. You never know where the next, you know, the next learning moment is going to come from. And in that respect, network, you know, has been phenomenal. You know, this is because of network. You know, there's no two ways about it. You know, and I think, you know, as Mark said, the Marketing Academy Fellowship for us was back in 2014. We're just as close as a group as we've ever been. And that network has grown. And, you know, we're all part of this much bigger Academy community now, you know. So network is brilliant. My first, in fact, two of my non-exec roles came as a direct result of networking. You know, I wasn't even looking for them at the time. And they literally, I tripped over them in conversation, that if I hadn't have been having, you know, if I just hadn't, you know, kind of thrown into conversation that was something I was thinking about, those two things would never have come about, but they just floated to the surface because of network, you know.
Well, good things happen to good people. Let's not forget. So
thank you.
we are coming towards the end. So we've covered loads of ground, but it'd be interesting just to hear about, you've still got future adventures to be told, but what would you like your legacy to be?
You know, I've always said to myself that all I really want to do is leave a positive footprint, you know, but behind me. And it doesn't have to be in a massive way. You know, I just hope that people that I touch along the way, you know, people that work for me, people that I coach, people that I mentor, you know, I hope that in some small way I can help them to, you know, to be the best versions of themselves, help them to do their best work, you know, help them to realize their aspirations. And, you know, because I think when you pop your clogs, I mean, apart from physical things that you might, you know, that you might leave behind, all you're really leaving behind is the impact you had on people. And, you know, and I really hope that, you know, that's all I would want, is that, you know, some people will remember me and will feel like they took something positive away from their interaction with me, that they will see forward and, you know, and pay forward themselves. If that happens, I'd be a very happy man.
Well, Simon, you know, clearly you've left a remarkable impact on myself and Mark, I'm sure, over the time, and many others as well. So you're well on your way, if not, but I'm sure there's lots more people that you're going to do that for. So thank you. It's absolutely brilliant to be chatting with you here. And I think now is the time for us to try and do a little bit of a summary. It's very difficult because there's so many great things that have come out of this conversation. In fact, I've clocked a few key words that I think really help to sum up just some of the things that have really sort of, you know, brought your career to the fore. So handbrake turn, what a lovely turn of phrase, right? Just an amazing thing, right? To be able to of constantly be looking at your career as a series of handbrake turns. But at the heart of that, you know, the thought around when you quote said, you are a change agent and you just happen to be in marketing whilst doing this. And of course, broadening out now into other areas of business as well. Go in search of the challenges. I love that. You know, you're basically someone who's going to run into the gunfire, not away from it. What a strong sort of visual, emotive sort of visualization there. You're curious, unconventional, And it stems a lot from that sort of, a lot from your past and what's happened with you. And you know, you talked about your story of your dad. And what I thought remarkable around failure as well, you know, the fact that you want to own your failures and not shy away from them, which so many people do. And the advice that you gave around running your own race, no matter what, something that's really I've taken away from, and it really resonates around not trying to look at others and really try and just, you know, be your person, be your own person. So I'll leave it at that. I'm sure I'll leave a bit of space for Mark, but just amazing, amazing to have you on. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, similarly, so grateful to have you on, Simon. All the highlights for me center around the key moments of vulnerability. When you talked about your 14-year-old self, about the value of failure and your failures, about loneliness, doesn't get talked about very much, that you're still learning, that you're quite shy. I mean, you were very specific about how that manifests. And, you know, that shared for me. Again, not often talked about. And I love the way you talked about the impact you want to have. And then just the final thought is you talked a bit about adventures. You used the word a couple of times. And how fitting that your next adventure is in travel. And I'm sure you'll be amazingly successful as you've been up to this point. Not every day or every week, but in general, very successful. And so it's been an absolute treat to have you on. So can't thank you enough. Thank you, Simon. It's been brilliant.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.